I'm honored to introduce President Teresa A. Sullivan, Terry, she asked us to call her, the 8th president of the University of Virginia. The first 7 were men. That is significant. Of course, Teresa Sullivan is not our president because she is a woman. She is our president because of her many extraordinary gifts and experiences, from her time as a faculty member at the University of Chicago, from her deep and broad experience over 9 years at the University of Texas, Austin, where she served in a wide range of administrative positions, from Director of Women's Studies to Departmental Chair, to Vice Provost, to Vice President and Graduate Dean, and those gifts and experiences from her tenure as the Provost and Executive Vice President for Academic Affairs at the University of Michigan. She is our president because of the depth and breadth and excellence of her leadership, because of her ability to function superbly in top positions during complex and challenging times, and because of the remarkable and wide-ranging talents she has, whether that is transforming the financial profile of an institution, talking to the folks in the Richmond legislature, or responding to the tragic death of a student and other trauma on grounds by trying something that had never been tried before. That something that President Sullivan did was to bring the entire university together for a day of dialogue, a spirited day of conversations between students and faculty and staff about how to move forward with strength and with renewed commitment to respond more quickly to the pain of the most vulnerable and to intervene in anything that looks like an abusive relationship. Through that amazing day on grounds and through the many powerful ongoing initiatives that came out of that day, she has led us, helped us to turn our energy and best ideas toward the creation of a community whose members take care of each other, a community of care. She is our president for all of these reasons, and on top of that, she is an outstanding scholar whose research focuses on labor force demography, especially on the pressing issues of economic marginality and consumer debt. President Sullivan is the author or co-author of 6 books and more than 50 scholarly articles. And, yes, her presidency marks a historic moment for us all. Terry Sullivan is the first woman president of Mr. Jefferson's university. I remember being at Bryn Mawr Summer Institute for Women in Higher Education back in the 80s and attending a seminar on the demands and the responsibilities and the sometimes joys of being the president of a university. And we were asked to imagine such a president and think about the qualities that make a president great. I realized as I did that exercise that, try as I might, I could not imagine a woman as the president of the University of Virginia. I could nail those challenges and those responsibilities and even imagine the joys, but I realized that my imaginary president could only be male. I had gotten my doctorate in literature at the university in 1972, taught the first women's studies courses at Kenyon College, and served as the director of women's studies here at the university from 1980 to 1989. I was all about recognizing women and recognizing the sometimes invisible knowledge about and by women across disciplines and out in the world. What was stifling my imagination? Probably the same thing that made it inconceivable to me before 2008, that a black man could assume the presidency of the United States. Not because a black man could not bring extraordinary vision to the presidency of our country, and not because a woman could not bring remarkable gifts to the top leadership position at a university. I think my imagination was stifled not only because top leadership positions for African American men in the United States were and are few, but because I knew directly the toxic experience of racism from growing up as a white child in a segregated small town in Louisiana. and a woman as the president of Mr. Jefferson's university. It wasn't that I didn't know that there were women who were presidents of some colleges in the 80s, but my own experience in academia seemed to say no, not at the University of Virginia. Over my 4 years of graduate study here, I had one woman instructor. During those graduate years, I was taught the work of three women writers in my field, which is 20th century and contemporary literature. After I received my PhD in 1972 and went to work, I was the only woman in the Department of English at Kenyon College. No wonder I was drawn to women's studies. So it is important that Terry Sullivan is a woman. It tells something to our students. They can indeed imagine that great president as a woman. It tells something to all of us that the founder's vision of knowledge and leadership does not preclude equity, though in his own time that precious truth of inclusive equality was not available to him. The University of Virginia grew from the seeds of wisdom Thomas Jefferson planted, from the roots that grew from those seeds. And the proof of his genius is that his university has continued to grow and change and flourish, with women in every part of this university, with more and more diversity in terms of race and ethnicity and economic circumstances in our student body. We understand now, our students understand, that we are global citizens. President Teresa A. Sullivan will lead us into our future, and it will be a far better future because she is at the helm. Because she is leading us, we will become a world-class institution at the same time that we never forget the importance of being a community of care. President Sullivan.
Sharon, thank you. And thank you to the Women's Chorus. What a splendid beginning to this evening's session that was. I enjoyed it very much. 2 days ago, my speechwriter told me that between now and the end of April, I'm going to make 65 public presentations. But you know, of all of them, this is the one I've looked forward to the most. It's really great to be here with you. Many of you here are graduates from the early days of coeducation. Some of you are more recent graduates. Some of you work at the university now. Some of you are both alumni and current faculty or staff members. And I know that the only reason I am here today is because you were here first. Some of you, by sheer will and determination, helped to shape the university's history in the period of coeducation. The common bond for all of us is that we share connections to the life of this great university. I'm delighted that all of us have the opportunity to gather this weekend for a time of celebration and remembrance. Let me begin with a flashback to the 1960s. In 1968, the year before UVA announced it would begin full coeducation, the Philip Morris Company introduced a new brand of cigarette called Virginia Slims. This new cigarette was slimmer and longer than other brands and supposedly more elegant, and it had a very specific niche market. It was marketed to young professional women as a kind of nicotine-charged symbol of feminism and women's liberation. And you might remember what their slogan was. You've come a long way, baby. That's right. Well, we've come a long way since this university was opened in 1825 as a school for young men. As brilliant as he was in so many ways, Thomas Jefferson never put much thought into educating women. A year before the university's founding, he wrote to a friend, "A plan for female education has never been a subject of systematic contemplation with me. It has occupied my attention so far as only the education of my own daughters occasionally required. We should probably forgive Jefferson for this oversight. He was a man of his time, after all, and it would be unfair to judge his 19th century ideas with our 21st century perspective. As Joseph Ellis wrote in his book about Jefferson, American Sphinx, lifting Jefferson out of that context and bringing him into the present is like trying to plant cut flowers. Jefferson wasn't alone in his disregard for educating women. In the early 1800s, comprehensive education for women was an unpopular idea generally. Opponents were worried that educating women would cause all sorts of problems. It would upset the social order. It would disrupt family life in the home. They were afraid the entire social system might fall apart if women were allowed to earn degrees. Some even believed that rigorous learning could damage a woman's fragile constitution. Some argued that women could not study Greek or learn algebra without fear of suffering brain fever or sterility. And in spite of these gloomy predictions, thousands and thousands of women have gone to college without getting sick or suffering a nervous breakdown. Just before this session tonight, you participated in a retrospective discussion about the university's decision to admit women. As you know, that decision did not come easily. It required a lawsuit by four Charlottesville women who brought their case with support from the ACLU after being denied admission to the college. A law school alumnus named John Lowe served as counsel for the women who were plaintiffs on the case. A federal court ruled in favor of the women and ordered UVA to come up with a plan for co-education. Ginger Scott became the first woman to enroll in the college under the new co-education plan. I believe that both Ms. Scott and Mr. Lowe are here with us this weekend. They are just two of the heroes of this period. Many others here this weekend also played pivotal roles. But old habits die hard, and it took a while for everyone to get used to the idea of having women enrolled in large numbers at UVA. A few days after the Board of Visitors approved a plan to open admission to women, the lead editorial in the Daily Progress was ominously titled, "Women at UVA." The editorial's tone was stoic resignation. "People realize that times have changed," it began, "and the day has arrived when tradition must go by the board." It continued in somber tones. "For the grounds that have been virtually without women in the undergraduate college for 150 years, a period of adjustment may be necessary. But not much time will be required for that. Life at our university will return to normal far more quickly than most people expect." But you know what? The university did not return to normal. Instead, it got a whole lot better. With the admission of women and with the coming of more and more students from foreign nations, with a real effort at inclusivity for everybody in the United States, regardless of their racial or ethnic heritage, the university has become a diverse community that reflects the wonderful diversity of the world around us. And in the four decades since co-education, women have helped set a much higher standard for academic performance here. The day of the gentleman C is gone, and today we have the day of the hardworking student's A, regardless of that student's gender. The growth in the number of women has been dramatic. In the fall of 1969, 7.2% of undergraduate students were women. In 1970, that number jumped to 13.7%. By 1983, it was 51%. And as of this fall, the undergraduate student body was 55.7% women, with more than 8,000 women enrolled as undergraduates. And we have a large number of women in our workforce, too. The university has 843 women in the teaching and research faculty and 381 women in the administrative faculty. Together, these 1,224 women represent 38% of those two faculty groups. We have 2,967 staff members who are women. This represents 58% of our total staff. Peter Flawn, in his book, A Primer for University Presidents, once said that all universities are run by 20 women, and the secret is to know one of those 20 women who run the place. I've already figured out who some of those women are at UVA, and I've even found some really competent and capable men, too. But looking back over the years, the pace of the social evolution is really remarkable. From the days when the experts worried that going to college would give women brain fevers, to the days when advertisers thought that the best symbol for women's liberation was a long, skinny cigarette, to these modern days when more than half of the university's student body is made up of women, we have come a long way. The university today has numerous support programs for women at every stage of their development to help them succeed here. These programs are designed for students and for faculty and staff, and even for young girls in our community. The UVA Women's Center, under the capable leadership of Sharon Davey, provides programs and services for students that advocate gender equity. As many as 100 students a year work at or they take courses through the center. The Young Women Leaders Program is co-sponsored by the Women's Center and the Curry School of Education. It is a year-long mentoring program that helps middle school girls develop their leadership abilities. Seventh grade girls in local schools are paired with UVA undergraduate women who help the girls reach their leadership potential. The School of Medicine sponsors the Committee on Women to foster the success of women in academic medicine. The UVA Women's Club gives women faculty and staff members, and also the wives of faculty and staff, a forum to interact with each other and to volunteer in community organizations. And these are just a few examples. I'm sure there are other groups and programs, both formal and informal, that I haven't mentioned yet. But together, they create a community and a network of support for women here. I'm pleased to be part of that network, and I promise to do my part to also support women at the university. I know that the many industrious women who came here before me helped pave the way for me to assume this position of leadership as the university's eighth president. At my age of life, I have often been the first woman to do whatever job it was I took in academe. I'm glad of the fact that before too many more years are passed, it's not going to be remarkable to hear that a woman has gained this position or that position. It will instead be assumed that, of course, women can do such jobs. That's why I don't like to make a big deal out of the fact that I'm the first woman to serve as president here. But I realize it's a significant milestone in the university's history. Had I not known it any other way, I would have known at the reception just after my election was made public, when women came and shook my hand, and many began crying when they did so. And I heard stories about how their fathers had gone to Virginia, and their husbands had gone, and their sons had gone, but they couldn't go. And, of course, I couldn't have gone to Virginia either. I'm also pleased that we now have our first woman serving as vice rector of the Board of Visitors, Helen Dragas. And in July, she will become the first woman rector of the university. These are newsworthy events because they've set precedents, and we hope they open doors for women who will follow us in these leadership positions. This weekend, we celebrate the 40th anniversary of coeducation. But women have been involved in the life of the university much longer than 40 years. The story we tell this weekend is a long, long story. Women first entered the university as students in the nursing and education schools at the end of the 19th century. And for many years prior to 1970, UVA admitted the spouses of students and the spouses and daughters of faculty and staff to college classes. So while we celebrate this milestone anniversary of coeducation, we do so with the knowledge that women have been a part of life here for more than a century. All the women here this weekend are part of a special sisterhood connected to each other by shared interests, by mutual affection, and connected to the university by our dedication to its values and our commitment to its future. The two songs the women's chorus performed tonight were Ain't No Grave and Still I Rise. These songs tell a story of fortitude and perseverance in the face of considerable challenges. They tell a story that invites us to look backwards at the obstacles we've overcome, but to look forward to the opportunities that stand before us. Those of us here tonight share a past, but we also share a future. Seeing the spirit and the enthusiasm in this room, I'm very hopeful about what that future holds for us. And I'm grateful to all of you for being here this weekend. I understand we have more than 300 people participating in these events, and that more than 30 of you have never participated in a university event before, and I thank you in particular for coming. I hope you will attend the panel discussions, networking events, and other activities going on tomorrow, and I hope you will come back to Charlottesville often. And now I understand we have some time for some questions and answers.
Many of us, having come from, and I was a 72, so I was the first years here, how do we deal with this? What's the right way to go forward so that we don't go backward?
Right. Those of us who are the mothers of sons think a lot about this kind of issue, yes. Yeah. And let me say that the sex ratio overall at the university is not 55-45, because the graduate and professional schools still tend to be have more men than women. But I do think it's an issue that, you know, deserves some attention. The way that the admissions used to balance was that young ladies had higher grade point averages and young men had higher test scores. And so since you looked at both of those, you ended up getting, at many universities, roughly equal numbers of men and women. What's changed is that now the women are getting higher test scores, too. And, you know, that really is good news. It has opened up many fields, particularly scientific fields, which women often felt excluded from because they frankly just didn't have the math skills to compete well in those fields. Now they compete pretty much across the board in everything. And that's wonderful for the women. I do think we need to think about the extent to which young men are getting left behind. That doesn't necessarily mean I want to change our admissions policy, but it does mean I think we need, as a society, to think about particularly the differential dropout rate in high school. And not only that, it's different between men and women. There are also serious racial and ethnic discrepancies. And that's another thing I think that we need to look at. The United States is not in a position to waste any talent right now. We need to make the best use we can of all talent. It might be that the University of Virginia is not the right place for everybody to go, but we have many colleges and universities in the United States. They have many missions. They perform many niche functions. I think a lot of our young men could find a good place to go, and I'd like to see encouragement of more of them to go. So thanks for the question. Yes, ma'am.
I was going to study down the same equity issue. Whether women are being paid less than men for comparable positions, whether within the staff structure they have the opportunity to move up the way they do in academics.
There have been equity studies done. They're often done within a particular college or school as opposed to across grounds. And we do make an effort to benchmark frequently with that. But my own experience with those equity studies is that even if you are completely equitable in year one, by year three you may be out of whack again. You have to go back and continue to look at it. One of our problems for the last 3 years is that we haven't had any raises for anybody here. And so it's been very difficult to do anything about inequitable situations. I would like to think we might be able to get to a point where we've got something to work with again in terms of looking at equity situations and some raise money. Other questions?
Yeah, we don't hear a lot about the women contributors among the alumni, so I'm just curious if there are any patterns there that may have changed over the years, you know, as some of the pioneers reach their peak power.
Yeah.
And who knows, maybe they also strong-arm, you know, their husbands to support the university, so I'm curious about that.
Right, that's a good question, and I've talked to some of our development people about it, and we have had a steady increase in the number of women who donate and also in the size of their donations. It is still the case that the largest donations tend to come from male donors, but we're beginning to see some shifts. We also find that although women may give smaller amounts of money, they tend to give for a long period of time. So once they begin as annual givers, they continue that pattern of giving, which of course is very valuable, as any dean will tell you. And of course, we do have many women alumni who are not close to their peak earning power yet, and those years are yet to come. I will say in terms of the kinds of positions our women graduates are going on to, the kinds of placements they have, they're doing very, very well. And you're finding them in great positions all over the United States and abroad, too. Is everyone shy or hungry? I don't know which. Well, let me just conclude this evening by saying it's been wonderful to see so many of you here. I hope you have a wonderful weekend. It's your university. Come back to it often. Thank you.